Welcome back to the second episode of Click Everyone. Thanks for joining in. We've got Swoo here. Today, we're just going to be covering a few short things. First one, I guess, is the console releases over the last couple of weeks around the Xbox Series S and the PlayStation 5. We've got the Apple September event. We'll give you guys a quick flyby in terms of what was announced there and our quick takeaways in terms of those key products and services that got launched. And then we'll also touch on the tablet market and whether the new iPad Air dovetailing out of that September event discussion and whether that's right for you. In particular, Kai is in the market for something, so we'll be going along through that. All right, so let's get started. Kai, how are we going?
Yeah, really, really good. Really looking forward to the three things we're talking about today. Obviously, it's that time of the year where there's a lot of tech releases. Part of the biggest news would be the console releases, being Xbox and PlayStation 5. It's received a lot of hype and fanfare. That's, it's well deserved given that these tech consoles don't come out every year. It's not like your phones or your laptops where every couple of years things come out. I think the last PS4 came out in 2013. So it's been 7 years and a bit before.
Geez, that was before I finished high school. Just saying.
Exactly. So, it's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot to take in and it's a lot to consider as well because there's quite a few different offerings between the Xbox and the PS as well. That's something that the gamers are all looking to pre-ordering the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so just taking a step back, we've got the Xbox Series X as Microsoft's flagship. Then they've got their, I guess, budget version that sits underneath that, the Series S. Then on the Sony side of the landscape, we've got the PlayStation 5 as the flagship and the PlayStation 5, I think it's called the Digital Edition. As their budget version. I guess the key differences across Xbox and PlayStation is the budget ones don't have a optical disc drive, so moving completely, onto the sort of digital side. The other thing to note is on the Xbox Series S, the budget one, and I'm getting the names confused as I speak here, so sorry about that. They have actually de-specced their Series S, so it's a little less powerful. I think it's got slightly lower frame rate or slightly lower video output. I'm not 100% sure, but I know it's a little bit neutered on that front as well. So, you're probably the bigger gamer of me. I mean, what do you think in terms of Xbox and PlayStation? Is any of them right for you? Are you going to get one of them?
I don't know if I will. I've always been a PlayStation. We've always had PlayStation consoles, but over the years, we've used it less and less just because, life takes over and then you just don't really get the time to play it anymore. I think the question will come from the exclusive releases and what sort of games you're into.
Yeah.
Because you'll have your PlayStation fans who are, really keen with the Final Fantasy series. And there's also, I think, a new Harry Potter game where it's a digital world where you just you get to roam around and live life as a Hogwarts student. So that's gonna
I don't know if the demographic of Harry Potter and Final Fantasy exactly overlap, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's the exclusivity, and also the recent news where Microsoft has effectively bought out the makers of Fallout. I think it was Bethesda.
I think it is.
So that's going to skew a few people's decisions because they make a couple of really well known games. So it'll be interesting to see who wins this round of the market share battle.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, the two camps are quite fanatic, right? I mean, if you're an Xbox guy or girl, if you're an Xbox guy or girl, you don't even think about the PlayStation side and vice versa. I mean, I think what's interesting with this generation is that because they're launching with the cheaper version, and it's not that much cheaper. We're talking the difference between $500 or $750 ballpark between the across, I think, Sony and Microsoft. But I think we'll start to see more people buy both.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I know it's a lot of money. I mean, we're talking, if let's say you buy one cheap one and one flagship one, that's still about, $1,300 maybe. It's still a lot of money, but I mean, with COVID and ISO, if we're all going to be stuck at home a bit more, I mean, I'm itching to go outside, to be honest, rather than stay indoors playing games. But I think we'll see more people getting both, but be keen to see how this plays out, because I guess normally the war between Xbox and PlayStation 5 flips every generation. I think who won the last one? It would have been PlayStation, wasn't it? I think is a consensus. I'm stepping into dangerous territory here. I don't want to get flamed or anything. But whoever won that, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top, especially with the Microsoft acquisition, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. And ultimately, you know, we're talking about the winners and the losers, but they're both releasing just before Christmas. So I don't think, you know, either company is going to suffer dramatically, given that it's a similar launch date and it's Christmas and everyone's going COVID crazy.
Yeah.
So I think they're both going to do well.
And the other thing about, I guess, the Australian landscape is stock will be a big decider of who wins, especially yeah. here. I mean, pre-orders, I think, went live a couple of days ago, and I'm pretty sure everything's gone already. For both the digital and the optical drive one. So it's I think especially for kids in that age that this might be targeting, it's a matter of what can I get? And even if I wanted an Xbox, if I can get a PlayStation, then I'm probably going to get that, and that'll lock me in for the next half a decade to a decade.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's right. And even existing tech, it was hard to get stock of. We looked at the Nintendo Switch, and you know, for the first 3 or 4 months of when COVID started and everyone was in lockdown, it's couldn't find stock anywhere.
Look, I'm going to say it now. The Switch and the Xbox and PlayStation are in completely different ballparks. You're barking up the wrong tree, and you think I was stupid waiting into which one won, PlayStation or Sony. Oh, my gosh. Wait till we get the people flaming you about Nintendo and how that's not a real console.
Yeah, no, that's right. Anyway, moving on.
All right, yeah, so I guess moving on to the biggest event of the year of Techtember, which is what I like to call it, but I think what others call it as well, is the Apple September launch, which is normally when we see the brand spanking new iPhone, the next generation iPhone. But this year, a little bit different, probably because of COVID, probably because the watch and the iPad are starting to come into their own as product lines. But I think in the last week or so, Apple announced their new line of Apple Watches. So they've got their budget SE and they've got their flagship Series 6 now. They've also got their Ridiculous Edition ones. I think that's still coming gold if you're that way inclined. And if you are, I've got some business ventures you can also help me fund. What else they launched? They've got the iPads. They announced the new iPad Air, which we'll get into a little bit after. They've got the normal iPad, which is really targeted towards students or younger iPad users, you know, people who are really just jumping into that tablet market for the first time. And then they also announced their somewhat peculiar Apple One subscription. And ironically, it's not one subscription. There's three different subscriptions. So another tick to the Apple marketing team.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd definitely be interested to see how the Apple One or the subscription model pans out over time. Obviously, it's still in its infancy. There's still a lot that they're still working out. You know, we've seen their venture into the fitness space as well. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how that plays out and whether it's actually going to generate traction.
I mean, the biggest question for me, I mean, it's probably different in the States where this is the services thing is primarily targeted to, but man, am I getting sick of subscriptions being charged to my cards right now? I mean, their cheaper subscription, which is $20 Australian, that gives you Apple Music, Apple TV, Apple Arcade, and 50 gigs of iCloud storage, is $20 a month. I mean, that's a lot. That's how much Netflix costs right now. And I'm very tempted to can my Netflix account because all I'm using it is for bloody Friends reruns or Suits reruns or Big Bang Theory reruns. And that's it. I mean, it's nothing new. I'm not watching any of their new content because it scares the living daylights out of me. But I mean, the $20 a month is a lot. And then you go all the way to their flagship Premier plan, which is $40 a month. I mean, that's a phone plan. That's a lot. And it's like, what are you getting for it? You're getting Apple Music. Great. You can get Spotify for that as well, for much cheaper. Apple Arcade. I bet half the people don't even know what that is. I mean, you probably don't know what that is either. We've got Apple News Plus, Apple TV Plus, iCloud, and Fitness Plus as well. I mean, it's a lot of services. And I don't know if the value is there, to be honest. I mean, paying $40 a month for services, I don't know. It only works if those, like, if the price is like, feels like it's been given away, like Amazon Prime. I mean, no one buys Amazon. What's their TV subscription called? Is it Prime Video or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Prime Video. Goes out and buys Prime Video on their own. They get Apple Prime as a subscription bundle, and then that comes in with it, and then you're willing to use it. No one's going to pay for it on their own. It's just like no one's going to pay for this stuff on their own. I mean, I don't know if the value's there. I mean, even as a hardcore Apple fanboy, I don't know if I'll be jumping on board this. I mean, I don't know about you.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it is definitely, you know, time will tell. It's not, you know, Apple's first rodeo. Around, you know, things that people think are going to take off. I mean, look at the AirPods, right? I think going back to your earlier point around, oh, you know, everyone's getting a bit of a fatigue in subscriptions, having to subscribe to different things. I think the strong value prop here would be a one size fit all kind of model where you've subscribed to Apple One. It's available for the whole family. It's got the news that you need. It's got the TV shows that you need, and it's got you know, the fitness app. That's what you're into. So, I think again ties back to that seamlessness of things, that now that the software is seamless with your hardware, with your Apple Watch, with your iPad and everything, that that might be compelling for some.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see what they do with the iPhone. I mean, I don't know if you remember last year when Apple TV Plus launched, everyone was like, sorry, I don't want to pay for it. They basically gave it for free if you bought an iPhone. I wonder if they'll do something similar with one of these Apple One subscriptions just to try and get some traction off the ground, because they're quite late in all of these services. There's existing incumbents like Netflix Stan in Australia, and now Binge has just jumped in as well in that video one. And then all the other ones, music, Spotify was obviously there first. Fitness, YouTube has been there, what, for the last decade or so. You got Nike in there as well with their own app, as well as a bunch of other indie apps as well. They're late comers, but, you know, Apple has a track record of being able to jump in and still win and generate a much bigger margin than anyone else, but only time will tell.
Yeah, no doubt.
So let's quickly touch on the watches. I mean, we've got the SE and we've got the Series 6. I mean, I've got a Series 4. I don't feel like this generation was enough for me to go out and buy a new one. I mean, like $600. So I'll probably be holding off. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'll be holding off. I don't think the new features are enough to get me over the line. You know, it's cool to have the sleep tracking, which I think is also available on the Series 5 as well.
I'm pretty sure that's just a software feature. And I've been playing around with, WatchOS 7 on my Series 4, and the sleep tracking is just, it's not much. It just keeps track of when you go to sleep, when you wake up. And I end up, I tried to go to sleep with my watch on, and I was like, no, this isn't for me.
Yeah. I think the key issue for me in the Series 4 that I've got would be when I'm, you know, going out for runs with just my watch. I'm running the cellular through my watch without my phone with me. The battery life dies, you know, relatively quickly.
I think you get 2 hours, maybe?
Yeah, it's a lot shorter than if you had your phone around with you.
Yeah.
So if I was active enough, that's probably enough to compel me to get the new Apple Watch with the bigger batteries.
But yeah. Apart from that,
I don't really see a reason in upgrading.
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, I'm probably waiting off to next year. Hopefully they bring a design change, because, I don't know, they changed it for Series 4, but even then it was quite incremental. But I don't know how much they can do with something this small on your wrist, to be honest.
Yeah. I do wonder if they're going to the circle shape, though.
Oh, I hope they don't. It's so ugly. I mean, if they do, I'll probably be the first one to line up and get it. But, they are so ugly. I mean, I don't know if you've seen different concept mocked up online, and they're disgusting. It's like you look at this and it's like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, I think I would trust Apple to do it right, but I think the main thing is you can't make it too big. So we've seen some of the Android versions where they're huge, right?
Yeah, you've got a clock strapped to your wrist. It's not a watch.
Yeah, no, that's right. So I think they just need to get that balance right between the size and how delicate the design looks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing that they announced was the SE. I mean, that's a pretty good price point. I mean, if I was jumping in, I might even think about next time just getting the SE rather than the flagship version, because no one's going to notice. This thing's tiny on your wrist. And if it's good enough, but I don't know. It's a very good value. I think it comes in around 400 Aussie. So anyone that doesn't have an Apple Watch, I'd highly recommend that's the one that you jump into at that price point, because I think it's almost half the price, because others are like $600, $700 almost now.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it has a lot of value for the different age groups that would use this watch.
Yeah.
So from, you know, I was a lab rat in my family to get the Apple Watch, and then,
I pushed you, just saying.
Yeah, sure.
I
saw the amount of data that tracks around your health benefits and the giving you updates when your heart rate is abnormal, based on usual, and I thought, you know, that is actually really useful for my parents. And so that was, you know, when I decided that they would actually benefit a lot from having these sort of trackers with them.
Did you end up getting them one?
No, they both have one now, and they both love it.
Yeah.
They're you know, constantly talking on their phone like the Power Rangers to their watch. So they're really enjoying it, and you know, we see it as part of Apple's marketing campaign as well, around the impact that these watches.
I mean, I've thought about getting my parents, especially my dad, as he's just hit 70 now, one to keep track of his health. But I feel like all I want to get are just questions around, how do I use this? What do I use this for? Why is it buzzing? Oh, I forgot to charge it. Why doesn't this work? It's like, oh, you know what? I'd rather just deal with your health issues, especially now that I'm at home with COVID. Like, you know, I'll keep an eye on you rather than try to put a watch on you. But yeah. That might change once all this blows over. I mean, with at a $400 price point, it's not that bad anymore. Like, yeah, when you're weighing up $600, and it's like, I don't even know if it's going to do anything.
Yeah, and the upside of the watch is you can actually not do anything to it. You can actually just not use it and just use your phone, but you'll wear it, and all the data it collects goes back to your phone anyway.
Yeah.
So it can be as low interaction as you want. But yeah, I just think there's a lot of health benefits that you know, would suit the aging demographic.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. And then the last thing that they announced at the September event, which is probably the biggest one, were the iPads. I mean, just to get this out of the way, we got the standard iPad that got launched. I don't even know what got upgraded. It's very stock standard. I think it was just a spec bump. They slotted a new chip in there.
Yeah,
give it up to date. But the biggest thing was the iPad Air. I mean, they brought finally the iPad Pro design with the flat sides and the full screen down to the middle tier now, which is good. They got rid of Face ID, which is interesting, but I think you've got some thoughts on the iPad Air.
Yeah, and I was really excited when I saw it, and I don't think I've been this excited with a new piece of Apple tech since I think the release of iPhone 6, half a decade ago. Given that it was actually a big jump in tech, and you know, the whole phone had a new design, facelift.
Yeah.
So that was really exciting, and this I think was more exciting because it was exactly what I was looking for, and it came out in a package, and that's, you know, very rarely does that happen.
Yeah.
In the consumer tech world, and the reason behind that is, you know, I use my tablet more like a laptop than I do a phone, and so when I saw the iPad Pro, I thought actually that's fascinating. You know, what it can do and how it could suit my needs. But at the same time, it was a bit higher in, you know, price point wise, and there was a lot of features that I didn't actually need, and so it felt like I was paying for a lot that I didn't need. So from that perspective, you know, it was cool. It would suit my needs, but it was more than what I needed. And then the iPad Air came out, which was a version that was a bit lighter than the iPad Pro, but it still maintained a lot of the grunt that and the features that would suit my needs. So that was like the perfect sweet spot that I was looking for.
Yeah, and most importantly, it's $500 cheaper. I'm
not gonna lie. Right. Cause you know, you look at the iPad Pro and it's expensive, and then you look at, you know, the cool Magic Keyboard that you're gonna want, and then there's the pencil as well that you may or may not need. That's another, you know, $700 easy.
I mean, right. But the thing is now, the Air has pencil support and keyboard support now. I mean, in the past, the Air was literally like the unloved middle child of the iPad lineup, where it's like, hey, look, you've got this great iPad Pro. It's got this cool keyboard. It's got this great pencil. And then you've got this guy.
Yeah. No, exactly right. As you were saying that, it's often, you know, every time we're considering a piece of Apple tech. I'm not sure if that, you know, applies to you because you tend to just buy the most expensive one.
Rude.
But every time, you know, I'm looking at the three kind of versions that they typically have, which is, you know, the good, the better, and then the best.
Yeah.
Right. Every time I look at the better, I think, okay, a lot of this would suit my needs, and a lot of the specs that are actually quite decent. But there was always a but, right? Whereas for the iPad Air, it's actually more than what I need, or it's not more than what I need, but it suits my needs, and there isn't really a but. When I was looking at the specs?
Well, I can tell you a couple of bytes that will push you towards the high end one, but you probably shouldn't listen
to
me.
Yeah, let's not. Yeah, so I think that's a good segue to the key thing that we wanted to talk about today.
Yep.
And that's, you know, understanding about the personal device / tablet that I've been looking for, more specifically to update my iPad.
Yep.
And where I would use my iPad, you know, typically for the last couple of years would be when I'm on the couch and I need something a bit more than my phone. So, you know, if I wanted to reply to emails, you know, one email is fine on your phone, but when you're replying to a slurry of emails, it gets quite tiring and quite hectic. The other use case that I use my iPad for is when I travel. So when I travel, I don't really need a full spec laptop with me because I don't really do anything that's, you know, computer intensive. I just need something again to read the news on, to watch videos, and to reply to emails mostly. So I've always found my tablet to be, my iPad to be sufficient, to be adequate. The one thing that was really lacking was that keyboard support.
Yeah.
So, you know, typing to a screen is fine, but then it gets quite annoying and then you get your oil spots on your screen and that's just, you know, for the people with OCD, that's
you could just clean your hands, but all right.
Could clean my hands.
Wash your hands, everyone. COVID safe.
Yeah, that's right. So putting that into perspective, I've always, you know, looked in the market at what are my other options.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, before the iPad Air came out, there was the iPad Pro, which, you know, they've designed it to be more skewed towards a laptop personal computer than it is a phone, right? You have the ability to manage your files. You have folders now.
For USB-C. I think the iPad has USB-C now, doesn't it? Yeah,
it's USB-C as well. So it's more like a laptop than it is a phone. And that's the sweet spot that I was looking for.
Mm.
Otherwise, I was looking at, you know, the MacBook Air as well and also the Surface.
Yeah.
The Microsoft Surface,
gross.
Because they're all fairly, you know, similar in what I need it for, which is a laptop/tablet, right?
Yeah. I mean, so I guess, I mean, from my perspective, and this is what I always tell people, what are you looking for? I mean, the laptop obviously gives you orders of magnitude more flexibility. You can, like, I guess modern computing is based around a laptop. You can do, everything was designed to be done on a laptop these days, or a computer, or a desktop computer, which is almost basically a big version of a laptop. So that gives you the most flexibility, but the iPad or a tablet, even the shoddy Surface, is really good at content consumption. Like just having something super light, super thin that you can just throw into a backpack or just throw onto the sofa, or, you know, watch while you're in bed to either Netflix or YouTube or reading a book, or even, you know, responding to emails or just reading the news, that just excels at that very specific use case. And so yeah. I guess just question to you, I mean, where's your thinking around a laptop versus the tablet then?
Yeah, so thinking about where I would be using it, not so much the how, but where I'd be using it, it would be when I'm not in front of my computer. So if I wanted to go to a cafe, or, you know, if I wanted to be out in the park or when I'm traveling, right, I could, as you've said, I could be flexible and get a laptop, right? Mm. And there are different spectrums of that answer as well, right? You could get, you know, one of those thick, chunky desktop replacement laptops, which would suit all my needs if I ever wanted to program or do anything that's CPU intensive. That would meet the needs as well. But at the same time, I value that portability.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be lugging a big laptop around with, you know, 2 hours battery life because of how intensive the, you know, the consumption of those different parts of the laptop would be. I want something that's going to last me all day when I need to write a quick email, when I need to read a quick article, right? So portability is important, but what I needed to do is quite important as well. And so, you know, going back to the original, the earlier generation iPads that I've had, that part has somewhat been lacking because it's all app-based. It's more similar to my phone. So it's almost like, why do I need an iPad if my phone does the same thing? Whereas with the iPad Air, you can store documents, you can actually manipulate things on the go. An example of that would be, you know, during one of my bridesmaids actually made her wedding, her wedding speech presentation on her iPad Pro, which she can do on iPad Air as well, obviously. And so that shows how versatile the tech has become.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I played some video montage or something off an iPad for your wedding.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's something your phone's not, it could do at a stretch,
yeah,
but it won't do comfortably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, the iPad is great. I mean, I don't see a role for it in my life, personally. I mean, I've bought many iPads that I don't know where they are anymore. But I guess the important thing, I guess, for everyone to understand for you as well is that you've got a big old school, disgusting and dusty and outdated Windows desktop at home. That is your main driver. You've obviously got your work computer that you've now moved home because we're all working from home. But then other than that, it's your phone. And so you're really looking to fill that gap, isn't it, between the phone and the desktop?
Yeah, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, because on one side, the phone's you got your super light computing needs, like on the go, and then you've got your desktop, which is your full-blown stuff, like what you're recording this podcast on. And it's really about filling in that middle gap. So it does feel like, I mean, I would, if you didn't have a desktop, or if you're looking to sort of hit both
knock out both your existing iPad and your desktop, I would tell you to get a laptop.
Yeah.
I mean, that feels, it's much more versatile if you could only get one device than Xiaomi. But because you're in a position where you can, I guess, carve out a specific space for a niche device like an iPad, that sounds like the way to go. But then the question is, which one? There's three to choose from. You've got your Pro, which will set you back $2,000. You've got your Air, which will set you back, I think, 900-ish?
But 1,000. It's 999, I think, for the base model.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Good luck with that. And then you've got the iPad, which is very basic, and I doubt that's for you. But where's your thinking around those three?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I was very quick to rule out the basic iPad because I think it's effectively what I have, but just an upgraded version. So
and it's ugly.
Internals, and it's the original design. And I think for me, the challenge, or not so much the challenge, but the constraint for me is trying to find a compelling use case for it.
Mm.
Right. So to me, the original iPad, I think I've said earlier, it just feels like a bigger iPhone.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's not as flexible. You can look at documents, but you can't save or, you know, really edit documents to any meaningful extent. Again, one or two documents is fine, but when you're dealing with multiple documents, it starts to get a bit hectic and tedious.
Yeah.
So I was pretty quick to rule that out. And then I saw the iPad Pro and I thought, you know, that's everything I need in a mobile, you know, personal computing capacity. But at the same time, it felt like I was
overkill.
I was paying for a lot of things that I didn't need.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't need the LiDAR. I didn't need things that could measure distances. It might be useful in one or two cases, but at the same time, I'd rather use that price difference in the accessories and you know, making the iPad Air more complete.
I mean, the reality is, the iPad Pro, I hate to lean into their marketing terms, but it is for pros. It's for content creators who use that as their job. I mean, you've got a friend who is I think architect.
Yep.
Was it? Yeah. Architect. My girlfriend's sister is in design, and they need the firepower of the Pro. And that's really the difference between the Pro and the Air. It's the firepower that sits behind it. Because they've both got pencil support. They've both got brilliant screens. I think the Pro has a faster, a higher refresh rate, which means it's a bit smoother. But to be honest, you didn't even need that for work unless you're video editing. It's really the grunt that sits behind the Pro. And if you're, I mean, even if you're like, oh, super high powered email user, I don't think you need. Yep. I don't think you need all that firepower to fire off your Gmail account.
Yeah, that's right. And I was talking to a mate who's the architect, and she was saying, you know, she actually needs the grunt because she's tried loading her PDFs on the old iPad Air, and it struggled because, you know, her design drawings had multiple layers. It's a very dense document, and so it struggled to load, and that's why she needs the Pro.
Yeah, and how she? I haven't spoken to her before. How does she find the Pro? I mean, if you listen to Apple's marketing, it sounds like this is the new frontier of computing. This will solve all of your needs. But we know in reality, I don't know how well that translates. Does it work that well?
Yeah. She rates it like for a designer, like she loves, or for an architect, sorry. You know, she loves being mobile and being able to you know, make drawings on the fly, make additions and make revisions on the fly.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, the pencil is really useful in her sense, where she can just, you know, circle out things, take notes, and then, you know, effectively think of a traditional architect where you have massive sheets of paper and you're making markings on the fly and then having to lug that around everywhere you go. Now it's in a, you know, neat little tablet that you bring around everywhere.
Yeah.
And it suits, you know, multiple purposes. She teaches at uni as well, and that's useful for her to annotate lecture notes as well. So it's something that she really, you know, it's really made her life easier.
Yeah, I mean, classic me to draw us on a tangent, start talking about the iPad Pro, and we already ruled it out. let me ask you a question to help bring us back to focus. Sorry, my bad. I guess you mentioned the Surface, and I mean, you call the Surface a tablet. I think it's more akin to a laptop. But what were your thoughts on why you put a line through the Surface then?
I think I was pretty sold on the Surface, to be honest, before the iPad Air came out. I thought, you know, it's flexible. It's not a big form factor either. It's not that much bigger than an iPad. It's pretty sleek looking. It's pretty well built.
It's heavy.
it's heavy. It's got the, it, you know, it, it needs to be because of the specs that, that it carries. And I think I would be sold if I did have my work laptop. So if I was, for example, running my own business, or if work only gave me a desktop and I needed something that I could work on the fly with, then I would get the Surface. But from my use case, because on the go, I don't need, you know, heavy Excel modeling. I don't need extensive PowerPoint, PowerPoint slide development.
Yeah.
The iPad actually suits my needs, and it's a lot simpler. And it's I think that for me, because I'm a sucker for being in the Apple environment, it's seamless as well. Like, it works with my phone, my watch, and it's that's a big plus for me.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the distinction that I keep drawing is in the case of this piece that we're talking about, will you be a content creator or are you a content consumer? And I think it feels like you are very much a consumer. Even with emails, I hardly call that content creation.
That's right.
It's still consuming content. And I think Windows machines, as much as I hate them, are great for content creation. I mean, that's the way. I mean, they're designed for business, I think. At least that from my perspective anyway. I mean, but the iPad just excels at being able to surface up content, emails, video, photos, text, just in a super easy and simple way to use, where you can literally buy the device, turn it on when you get home, and you're off to the races. It's done.
Yeah.
You don't need to set anything up, and it's great.
Yeah, no, that's right. And that's a really good way to put it, the consumption or the creation perspective.
Yeah.
And if I really needed to create things, then I wouldn't be thinking about the iPad.
Yeah.
I would be getting a Surface or a ThinkPad, because they're truly the workhorses of the industry if you needed Windows.
Yeah.
So that's what I would be looking at. But because I know, because I have a PC laptop for work, that kind of rules it out. Like, if I need it when I travel, I'll bring that laptop with me, because it itself isn't too big or too heavy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got two more questions on the iPad around before we close this out. Is one, I'm going to lay them out first. One is, you mentioned a keyboard before. What's your thinking around that? Because I know the new keyboards that Apple have launched are ridiculously expensive.
No, that's right. So I think, you know, we have the option of going with Apple, which means we have the smart keyboard, I think that's what it's called, which is the cheaper one. And then there's the magic keyboard, which is the one that elevates your iPad. And
is that the one that floats?
Yeah, the one that floats with the touchpad.
That's magical. Yeah.
And that's, you know, like, it's going to cost you half a kidney or something. Like, it's $500. Yeah. So that was an interesting release, because it has a touchpad, but it's not a cursor, right?
Nah.
So it still kind of scrolls through the different parts of your screen in a sequential manner.
It's like hitting tab on a computer. That's what I equate it to.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, because I need the iPad as more of a secondary device, that, you know, the most intensive thing where I'll be doing is writing emails, I'm keen to rule that out and use and get the smart keyboard.
Yeah. The other thing is, I think the magic keyboard is very heavy for what it is. I think it adds, like, it's like the thickness of the iPad. So your iPad becomes twice as thick. And I know iPads are thin, but when you pick up an iPad right now, they're light as, and doubling the weight of that is actually quite significant.
Yeah, no, that's right. It does look cool, though. So if you wanted that cool factor, like, if you want to be sitting out in a cafe sipping your latte with...
Oh, yeah, because that's you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's 100% me.
Yeah.
Then get the magic keyboard. It's really cool. But for what I need it to be... very happy to use my fingers to navigate around the screen as opposed to a touchpad. But I still prefer a keyboard as opposed to tapping on a screen. It's just not ergonomically comfortable, right? It sits on your lap and then you're looking down, tapping away at the screen. It's just not overly fun.
And the iPad's designed for touch. I mean, everything, like, the whole system is designed for touch. And sure, if you're your friend who uses the computer as a work, the iPad as a work computer, then you might need that on a desk. Like, when you put your iPad on a desk, you may need the trackpad rather than constantly lifting up your hand to touch the screen. But, you know, if you're watching Netflix, you're probably, like, touching the screen at the start to pick what you want to watch, and then at the end to turn it off, and that's it.
Yeah, no, that's right. And if more often than not, you're looking for that trackpad to navigate your screen.
Mm.
You probably need a laptop.
Yeah, true. If you need that precision, it's not an iPad.
No, that's right. I think from a keyboard perspective, I'd be looking at the smart keyboard. I haven't looked at the third party manufacturers yet. So I think
Apple Logitech. All the way.
I think Logitech makes a couple of good ones as well. So, you know, I'll be looking into that. But at this stage, you know, I'd be leaning towards that smart keyboard, which is, I think it's about $250 thereabouts.
Jeez, so I don't remember how much it was.
I'd get that. And then, you know, there is a perceived savings of about $250 and that's just about the price of a pencil too. So,
you can hear Tim Cook rubbing his hands as his bonus check is being written out right now.
Just take my money. The pencil, the use case or the, you know, the
do you need a pencil? I mean, seriously, I have a pencil and I lost it. I don't even know where it is.
I don't know. I think the verdict's still out on that one. The only reason why I would actually use a pencil is when I am signing documents, when I'm e-signing documents.
Oh, yeah, because you're that high-powered executive, aren't you? Just because your signature's worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, it's not often that happens, but when it does, it's useful, so I don't have to print something out, sign it, scan it, send it back. It's sign and scan, so it's a much, much quicker process.
Mm.
And looking at how good the pencil is in terms of responsiveness.
It's great. It's so fun to use. I mean, I'm not an artist and I don't even use my pencil, but I've used both the original and the new generation one. And the new generation one doesn't feel that much better than the first one, but you can tell it's better.
It's much better, smoother. Yeah.
It's faster.
Especially around the angles as well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one nice to have kind of benefit would be it would encourage you to write more. So if you're taking notes, instead of typing, you're actually scribbling more. And the reason why that came to mind was because I think I recently picked up a pen to jot down a couple of notes and I realized how shitty my handwriting's gone just because we've been typing most of the time.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. No, I had a conversation with a work colleague that I won't name, but she wrote some handwritten notes and then sent me a photo and I looked at it and I was like, mate, this isn't in English. She's like, no, don't make fun of my handwriting. I haven't written for months. And I'm like, yeah, I can tell. I've always thought about whether I could use an iPad in a work context for note taking. But it's a very expensive notebook then.
It is. As with every Apple enthusiast, the rationale would be to buy it and then start learning, you know, new skills.
You're going to be an artist in 6 weeks.
100%. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like going to IKEA and start retrofitting all the cool stuff with what you might use it for.
Yeah. That's
right. You could use it for.
You've got LED light strips everywhere for some reason.
No, exactly right. Just to round it out, I think the iPad.
No. Most important question. What color are you getting? Did you see they've got pink, they've got green, and they've got blue now? Surely you're getting a green one.
I actually really like that, you know, every now and again, they'll release products with that full array of colors. You know, it started with, what was it, the iPod Nano, where they released
the iPods. That was when Apple was fun. Now they're just a bunch of stuck-up design freaks.
That's right. And it's refreshing because it's not everyone doesn't have the same product.
Yeah.
I've seen the iPad colors. They are nice, but I'm more of a solid color kind of guy. So
solid colors, pink, green, blue, they're solid.
They're all light though. They're all skewed towards the light side of things. And so that probably means that I'll go with the space gray.
Oh, don't get the gray. If you're going to go boring, at least get the original silver.
if they came out with the midnight green, I would have gotten that.
You wouldn't put green, that type of green on an iPad.
I just mean like the solidness or the darkness of that color. So if they came out with like a blue equivalent or any other color that's not light, I'd consider it.
Yeah. I don't know. The colors are quite fun. I mean, I look at the blue one and it's not bad, but it is quite feminine.
Nothing wrong with it. I just don't really like the lightness of it. That's all. Like, the green's nice as well, but if it was a bit darker, that might have excused me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you're looking at, I mean, I guess to round this out, you're looking at a $900 iPad plus $250-ish for the keyboard. That's $1,150. And then another pencil. That's a whole, that's a lot of money, dude.
That is. So the pencil can wait.
Don't buy the pencil, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, this is for most people. I mean, unless you really need it, if you're thinking about it, don't buy it. That's what I'm going to do. You can live with that. Because I bought one thinking, I want to become an artist, like you said. And then I didn't even know where it was 6 months later.
Yeah. And, you know, we know a few people who have got the pencil, and, you know, the use case is pretty sparse, so it just sits around. So I might borrow it, see how I go for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, do that. Borrow someone else's. Make sure you don't lose it. But that should be enough.
Yeah, no, that's right. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll provide an update when it releases in October.
Oh, that's really handy. So, yeah, give us an update when you buy it. But I guess we'll close this episode out here today. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll join in next week for the next episode of Click. But otherwise, thanks for clicking in. See ya.